So welcome to the call today. One thing they'd like us to start the meetings with is this antitrust policy notice. I think people hopefully can see my screen. Basically, it says that by being on these calls, you agree to abide by the different federal state laws of all countries, I guess. We hear the meeting agendas and anything against antitrust and competitive laws we will be in accordance with. So please respect that. Stop to share now. So one thing we like to do to start the meetings is to run around and introduce ourselves, just so people know. I'm Mark Wagner. I'm the chair of the committee. I work for a company called Red Hat that you may have heard of. I'm also on the TSC for Hyperledger. So who'd like to go next?
I'll go. This is Todd Little. I'm an architect on Oracle's blockchain cloud service.
Guy?
Everyone. My name is Attila, and I'm a maintainer of Hyperledger Caliper.
Cool, thanks. How about Guy? Guy's out getting coffee. Christian, you want to do a quick introduction?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So my name is Christian Cornflow. I'm a PhD student at the University of Waterloo, and I'm working with Kishef, and we are here to talk about our Fast Fabric paper that we recently uploaded on Archive and the available publicly in May via ICPC 2019.
Thank you. Kishef?
Hi, my name is Kishef. I'm a professor in the School of Computer Science, and I've been supervising Christian for the last few years now. We've got a group of about 16 faculty members working on various aspects of blockchains. We're calling it the Sirius Research Group. And one aspect of that is focusing on Hyperledger performance. And so this is our first paper, but we have several other pieces of work along the lines of improving performance and scalable consensus protocols for Hyperledger. But Hyperledger is pretty much the main focus of our work in terms of the blockchain, though we do work underneath in terms of consensus protocols and performance and databases, and above in terms of applications.
Cool, thank you. And yeah, anytime you guys want to join this call, I mean, it's open to all, and we love the different input. Imre, you want to go?
Yeah, sure. Hi, I'm Imre Kocsis. I'm with the Budapest University of Technology and Economics. And I think we do similar things, and I'm looking forward to hearing about this paper. I haven't had the chance to read it yet.
Okay. Mr. Ferris, do you want to go? Quick introduction, who you are, what you do.
Yes, as soon as I find the unmute button. Hi, guys. Chris Ferris, I work for IBM, one of the maintainers on Fabric, and I'm now sort of leading up the work we're doing on performance and scale for Fabric and IBM's blockchain platform, which is based on Fabric.
Cool. I should talk to you about that sometime. Guy, you back yet? Maybe not. Guy works at R3. I think he's a solution architect there. Okay, so I appreciate the Fast Fabric folks, Christian and Kishef, getting up and joining us for this morning's call. We know you had spoken to the Fabric people previously and had done a little presentation there. But I guess, people here have a different angle to how we're approaching or, viewing performance. We're looking actually all across Hyperledger, not just at Fabric, but people thought it would be great to get you guys together and have some discussions. So appreciate you joining. So Todd, did you have any specific questions or how do you guys want to do this?
Thanks. put me on the spot. I don't know about specific questions, and I read the paper just when it came out, and I've forgotten a little bit. But one thing I was curious about, if you guys had looked at all at not having the ordering service get the entire transaction, just the IDs, and let the transactions themselves be gossiped amongst the appropriate parties.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. So one part of our improvements is actually proposing that the order just does the consensus on the IDs. We didn't look into gossip because we only had enough computational power or resources available to have a single order. But gossip would definitely be one way to go, or I mean, we just didn't look at how blocks would be disseminated between orders, but we definitely looked at just ordering by ID.
Well, I was even thinking between the orders, the OSNs, I was thinking as well, just to have the blocks never even go to the ordering service and simply have the gossip protocols be used to disseminate them against peers.
I think the issue becomes that of Byzantine fault tolerance of the gossip protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've done some work on Byzantine fault tolerant gossip, but you know that's not. In fact, as it turns out, there, no such protocol has been described in the literature, as far as I can make out.
Yep.
So we have. I mean, I worked on it with another colleague about several months ago, but we would need to kind of clean it up, make sure it works, and so on, before that could be considered.
Yeah, you still need to get the. I mean, again, if you're just going to use the ordering service to order the transactions in a block, you still have to get all of the transactions to all of the peers somehow.
That's correct. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's going to end up being six of one, half a dozen of another, because you still have all of that traffic. And in fact, you have much more traffic gossiping between all of the peers, because you don't necessarily know where they all need to end up, whereas the ordering service can typically be handled with a fewer number of nodes, and you only need to gossip essentially, you know, or, you know, you only need to coordinate between those nodes, the state.
Yeah, maybe we are saying the same thing, but let me give you a vision of what we're looking at. The ordering service corresponds to a set of nodes which are geo-distributed, which together provide a globally distributed ordering service. At least that's our view of things. It's not going to be that. The clients, Hyperledger clients, are going to contact the closest representative of the ordering service with the transactions. And now what you're proposing and what we completely agree with is that there's no need for the ordering service to deal with the transaction bodies, which are, you know, up to 4 kilobytes, even longer perhaps, and rather could just work with 32-byte or 64-byte IDs and do the ordering based on that. Nevertheless, the bodies still need to be distributed amongst the various ordering service nodes. The fact is that the ordering service is supposed to be Byzantine fault tolerant, so even if you'd use gossip or a multicast tree or something to distribute the bodies amongst the ordering service endpoints, that needs to be made Byzantine fault tolerant.
Cool, thanks.
Is that necessarily so? Sorry.
Go ahead.
It's nice to have the ordering service to be Byzantine fault tolerant, but actually it depends quite a bit on the use case that you want to support with Fabric. So actually what a BFT protocol protects you against is reordering of messages and basically throwing messages away, and there are actually use cases when those are not necessarily that important. So that's just my two cents, that it's actually, Fabric is nice from the point of view that you don't have to go for DFT basically ordering when your business use case doesn't need it.
I completely agree. I mean, for the cases where you can use Kafka or some kind of dissemination just ordering service as pure ordering that doesn't require Byzantine fault tolerance, sure, that's fine. But in those cases where you want to use BFT Smart or some kind of a BFT protocol in the back end, for those cases, the gossip service also has to be Byzantine fault tolerance. So I'm not saying that.
Okay, I'm not entirely convinced about that, but I may not be right. I haven't thought this through yet.
Yeah, we've spent about a year and a half thinking this through. So
and I didn't. So yeah, I accept that.
Those are the details with you. Yeah, no problem.
And in any case, you don't win anything by doing the gossip on the peers instead of the orders, because you just have to go through a lot more nodes than if
that's
you
right.
let the ordering do the gossip.
That's exactly right. It's just there's more gossip involved. So you're saving network traffic in the ordering service, but not amongst the peers. In fact, you're increasing it.
Yeah. And generally speaking, gossip is not a very efficient protocol. You're far better off using a multicast tree. And if you look at BizCoin, for example, that's exactly what they do. They use co-signing and multicast trees to make their BFT protocol very fault-tolerant and efficient. And so gossip is, generally speaking, not a good idea.
Yeah, I guess I was looking at it going, I'm not convinced you need a BFT gossip protocol, but we could talk about that. I guess the other reason I was suggesting that be considered is because of the privacy and confidentiality, right? The ordering service doesn't really need the bodies of the transactions.
Yes, in our work, we've already done that. If you look at the paper, one of the first things we did was to not order the bodies, just the headers. So we separate the headers and the, or other versions, you can separate the hash from the body. We just do ordering on the headers and then we reunite them at the end.
So in that case, you can encrypt the body so that the ordering you need the body of the transaction.
I know, you can always encrypt stuff, but then you get into a key management issue. But okay, I read the paper quickly. Can you explain what you mean by doing the headers and the body separately? Ordering service still is distributing blocks with full transactions, right?
Right. So in our case, we single order, so there didn't need to be any dissemination in the ordering service. So the orderer would receive a transaction and then do the ordering of all the received transactions just on the ID. So we kind of didn't look at how the ordering service would actually disseminate the transactions, but just do a fast ordering on the IDs. And then the whole block would be disseminated to peers. We had to mainly do that because otherwise the ordering service would have not been able to keep up with the peer improvements.
Okay, cool. Sorry, is this SSL file available for, well, not tinkering with, rather shooting at it a bit? The reason I ask is that we are beginning in a, there are a few Portuguese guys with whom we are beginning some fault injection experiments for Fabric and for a few other platforms too. And it would be nice to have a look at this performance improvement and see if there's any cost in dependability and resilience for the performance improvements vis-a-vis fault tolerance, basically.
Sir, can you repeat the question in the beginning?
I was a bit convoluted. That's the other guys maybe accustomed to that by now. So is what you are reporting on, is this available as software to try out and maybe kick around a bit?
Yeah, are the bits available?
I haven't made the code available as of yet. I've been in talks with the Fabric team, and we were to discuss how to best make it available, and I haven't heard from them in the last 2 weeks. So as of now, it is not available, but I'm happy to share the code.
That would be nice. We will be doing fault injection experiments on Fabric in a month or so, I think it's scheduled. Attila, when will we do this?
One and a half months.
So if it will be available anywhere in 1 or 2 months, then we may have the time to have a look at this implementation too, and it would be a really nice comparison.
Okay, so Bess, do you tell me how would it be most practical to make it available? Just open up the GitHub repository publicly, or do you want anything else?
No, whatever suits you. So basically, it's your code. We can compile it for ourselves. I hope at least that all the operational management stuff is the same as with standard Fabric. So if you make it available either to me or even better Attila, then it would be nice to have a look at it, if you agree.
Sure, no problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if the Fabric team didn't really want you to open it up yet, then if you could just make it available to Emery and Attila, that would be great. Don't want you going against what the Fabric team wants either.
So yeah, but okay. I'll have to talk to some people, because we shouldn't be discouraging people to open source stuff, even if it's works and so forth.
I may have misheard things. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there was a conversation. I thought that, and again, I heard, you know, second or third hand that, you know, it was a good conversation, and we're talking about how we integrate some of these things. I think it's, if I wasn't mistaken, again, when I weren't the changes based on like 1.2, I think? Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So obviously there's been a fair amount of refactoring, and and now there's already work ongoing on, you know, building and caching between the in front of the Couch database and so forth. So but it'd be valuable to share that and figure out what we can easily integrate. I think certainly we're open to it. I know that performance is a priority, and we'd like to be able to leverage, you know, I certainly don't have an NIH problem at all. I think that's the whole point here, is that the reason that it's open source is so we get these kind of contributions coming in.
Cool.
Mark, can I have one further question?
Yes, the whole point of this meeting is for people to ask questions and have a discussion.
Okay, I just got excited because this is really cool stuff. So what I don't seem to see in the paper is a comparative analysis of the execution time of the major steps that Fabric as a whole does. So when we talk about performance improvements, it's always good practice to shoot at the biggest chunk of delay first. Did you do any analysis of basically what takes how much amount of time and effort? Because as I see, most of the things seem to be really good and really deep. What I'm missing is the comparison of the steps of the consensus and ordering and whatnot workflow that due to their sheer length can bring the largest improvements. We did do this for 0.6, and it was quite tedious work, so I'm basically asking whether you did the same for 1.2.
Right. So unfortunately, we just didn't have enough space in the paper to go more deeply into how we chose the improvements. So we did quite an extensive call graph analysis and benchmarked single steps in the path to see where the biggest bottlenecks were and then try to eliminate one by one. So I can make a call graph available to you that I sent to you by per email.
I mean, just to add a bit to that, I mean, we don't, you know, even though the paper looks fairly random, here's two things to touch here and four things to touch there, and look, it works. There is a principled approach, which is to understand and remove the bottlenecks one by one. So all of the work we did under the covers to determine the call graph, to determine the cost of each operation, et cetera, we just didn't have space for, but we have a huge amount of experimentation and documentation that we can make available, but it's not something that we could put in the paper. So yeah, we did do all of that. It's not magic. You need to know what you're doing.
I know. That's exactly why I asked. Actually, it wasn't exactly the call graph that I would be interested in, rather in phase-wise latency distributions. That's not exactly the same. So if you treat each transaction as a transaction, then sort of a breakdown of the latencies in an application performance monitoring style, but call graphs are nice too.
Yeah, we have the breakdown in latency as well, along with every call, along with the call graph.
Okay. So I personally would be very interested in that, and I would appreciate very much if you could share that. But I think that this whole working group would be interested in that. But I look to Mark about that.
No, I mean, you know, feel free to share everything to the performance and scale working group list if you want. So, you know, we get more eyes on it, and I think most people would be interested in that join this call.
Yep. So, Christian, you know, there's some of your weekly reports, you could perhaps merge them and make it into a document and share it with the group.
Yes, sure.
Our first action item. All right. So I had a question just for the group in general. It looked like you went and added a caching layer rather than wait for things to get written out to the database and the store. Does that become a reliability issue at some point if we're not waiting for things to get written? Or is there still some kind of act going on that, you know, it actually got written to storage? Or do we not care because it's distributed in the cloud and its chances of it all going down at once are nil, pretty small?
Essentially, we relied on the redundancy that is already given by the blockchain. So if every peer sends the transaction to a persistent storage at the end after caching, at least some of them will succeed. And if others don't, they can replicate the state from the ones that succeeded.
Okay. Todd, does that go with general practices nowadays?
Yeah, I would think that'd be fine. You know, it's an availability question, right?
Right.
So as long as you don't have all of your peers in one data center, I think you're probably in pretty good shape. But
yeah, in one rack going to the same storage.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. From a theoretical perspective, each of the peers is acting as sort of a primary backup type replica. And the ordering service is disseminating to a bunch of replicas. And in any classical algorithm, we assume that only a certain number of replicas are going to fail. And if we have more than F plus one, so that's the idea over here.
Okay, yeah, I in theory agree with that. I just sometimes find that when you're all, you know, everything's in the same data center? You know, is it all in the same rack? And what happens if something happens to that rack? But in theory, blockchain is distributed across multiple vendors too. There's not one central place. So
that's right. And the peers, for reasons of transparency and auditability, ought to be hosted in different data centers owned by different organizations, etc. So we're getting diversity in that dimension as well.
Okay. Can you describe a little bit what you used to drive the test? Did you use the Fabric performance thing? Did you use Caliper, which is a Hyperledger performance benchmark tool?
So we essentially kind of wrote our own benchmark to be able to better configure the system as we needed. And we found that Caliper didn't really give us the flexibility that we needed. I'm not quite sure what exactly the case was, because our co-author Steven was trying out Caliper, but I think that Caliper cannot send transactions concurrently. That is my best guess, but I know that for some reason Caliper wasn't powerful enough for our cases. So essentially we wrote our own code in Go that would benchmark the time when transactions were sent and when they were received.
Yeah, we've taken to the same thing. Caliper doesn't, you can't ramp up the ingest rate fast enough with Caliper because it's single threaded. And you need a gazillion clients to really put a significant load on. So we've been using the Go SDK to do our performance benchmarking.
Okay, now has that feedback been given to the Caliper team? Do they know?
Not yet, but it's I think if I'm not mistaken, we have discussed with Victor and team what we're doing internally. I haven't been part of those actual conversations. I know Tong Lee has. He's driving a lot of this for me. And it's likely that we're going to be introducing something into open source, and whether it becomes a Fabric-only thing or a community thing, maybe merged with Caliper, I think remains based on conversations that'll probably happen this week in Hong Kong. But we've basically got a framework that you can easily spin up a network, run a series of tests, tear it all down, lather, rinse, and repeat. Pretty powerful.
Okay. Is that part of the Fabric framework? Or
We're leveraging parts of other Hyperledger projects. We're leveraging Cello, we're leveraging the Go SDK, and then there's some glue and a clunky UI for gluing it all together and running it. Basically, Jenkins manages the processing of the test and so forth.
Cool. Yeah, I may be interested in.
Yeah, and it's specifically designed for Kube. I think Mark, we could maybe once we get it out there, we could figure out how. Or whether it has any challenges at all with OpenShift. I wouldn't imagine it would.
Yeah.
Because we don't use Helm charts. So.
Okay. Well, I should be able to test it out in a week or so if you want.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Okay. I had a few more questions. Do other people have questions that are on the call still? Okay, you've had your chance. So if you guys talked about you were limited by hardware, are there plans to get more hardware? Or, you know, if hardware somewhere appeared out of the air, you know, would you be able to use it to do bigger, you know, larger scale testing?
Let me handle that, Chris. So we are using a fairly powerful setup of I think 12 servers in one rack. For the fast fabric work, we are in the process of adding a Byzantine fault tolerance to the consensus protocol. So one of the citations in the paper is to an archive preprint called Arcanopus, and that is a sort of our protocol for Byzantine fault tolerant consensus at high speeds. For doing that work, we are looking at four data center clusters. This is in collaboration with UNC Massachusetts Amherst. So we have two clusters at UMass and two clusters at Waterloo. And they'll be geographically distributed, you know, but well, 5-10 milliseconds apart. The one piece of hardware which we don't have, which we'd love to have, would be a crypto accelerator, because from our call graph analysis and latency analysis, we know that that's the single biggest bottleneck remaining on the committer side. So if somebody were to donate or otherwise make available a crypto accelerator, we would absolutely love that. In terms of these performance of the, I think the servers we have are reasonably well sized. I don't know if we could go too much bigger on those. Yeah, Kristen, I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
Yes, I agree. The only thing was that in a single data center that we used for the Fast Fabric, we essentially then at the end ran out of servers to generate the load and also run the network. So there we couldn't run more than one, but with the multiple data centers, we should then be able to also run multiple orders.
Okay. And you didn't use Docker, correct? Or did you? Was this all containers or was this bare metal?
That was bare metal.
We started out using Docker and we quickly realized that we were getting all kinds of performance artifacts. And, you know, I've been working in the space for some 30 years now, and I did some of the early work on the predecessor to Docker. So I'm well aware of the contention that happens at the cache level when you use Docker. So we didn't want to cause any aliasing issues. So we decided to move out of Docker at the earliest opportunity.
Okay, cool.
Maybe add to that, we don't see getting rid of Docker as a performance improvement, because there is definitely value in having these parts Dockerized for deployment. It's just that we wanted to see where the actual bottlenecks of Fabric were and not bottlenecked by Docker.
Okay, but then you still have to worry that Docker may not run into the bottlenecks you find, per se. But Chris, is Fabric supported outside of containers, or is it
pure? Well, we only ship the containerized pieces. The binaries you can actually get, you can run them yourself, but we basically distribute it as images, and okay. the other binaries are really just the tooling and so forth.
Right.
You can always take stuff out, right?
Yeah.
but I mean, and when you say it's supported, I mean it's a function of what are we able to sort of deal with as a community. So I think our approach thus far has been, okay, so we support Docker with Alpine now, containers, and you know, we're open to having other people bring other other container capable, you know, I mean, like for instance, we could think about, you know, maybe doing something with container Linux or even, you know, bare metal and different processors, whether it's ARM or whatever, but it's really up to people to contribute, right? We're not going to go beyond what we have presently without additional rolling up of sleeves.
Okay, cool. So like if there was a RHEL-based image that could maybe survive?
Sure. Although RHEL, I think, is a little bit of a challenge just from an open source perspective. We could do the build, but then the problem is that nobody, I mean, can people get a free RHEL to do it?
I don't know.
Just the gimped out version that blows up after an hour of use or something. I don't know.
I'll have to find out.
Yeah. I mean, certainly CentOS or Fedora would be fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, the bottom line is whatever we deliver has to be fully open sourceable thing, you know.
Right. All right.
So just a kind of a note from our, you know, our view is that, you know, we are going for the bare metal, highest possible speeds, and we are building basically prototypes. We have no illusion that what we're doing is usable in practice. So we're expecting the other people will take on some of the ideas and translate that into, you know, working, running solid code, but that's not what we do.
Cool, not a problem. It's understood in the benchmark world, right? Okay, yeah. And University of Massachusetts isn't too far from where I am, so if you need help at some point, feel free to reach out.
I thought I heard you say that hardware might show up at our doorstep. I'm curious if that's
correct. I didn't say at your doorstep. I said maybe become available.
Okay, this is hardware at our doorstep. That's fine. Do you guys have access to crypto accelerators?
Like NVIDIA cards or like specific FPGA kind of stuff?
FPGA or anything that can, you know, make the verification step faster.
So let me reach out to some friends and see if they are willing to help.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, if you can get Hyperledger to that magic 50,000 number, then all this talk of, you know, blockchains can't keep up with Visa, whatever. There's this 50 is the magic number. And we know we can't get there without hardware support for the computer side. We need the verification support. We that is the biggest bottleneck right now. We can't get. So we desperately need help there.
All right. Let me reach out. And do I have your email here? Do we?
It's keshav@uwaterloo.ca.
Okay.
It's in the paper.
It's in the paper. Okay. Yeah.
It was on the invite too for the PSWG, Chris.
All right. Let me reach out to some friends and see what they are willing to help with.
Thank you.
If there's no other questions, we can let these guys go. I would say, you know, thank you very much for joining us. And as I said at the beginning, this call is open to all, and you know, we encourage people to join. So if you, you know, feel you need something to do on Tuesday mornings, feel free to join and share your results and you know what we've talked about. Harish has been a regular member. He's not here today. I think he's reached out to you guys already based on the paper he did. And you know, we have Attila and Imre here most of the time. So there's, you know, it's not just us old guys in the industry. There's a bunch of, you know, young academic folks here too. So you're always welcome. Anybody else have last questions?
I just had a question about the nature of the group. I realize this is like the performance group. Are there any documents or past websites, wikis, something that we can go and look at to see what you discussed in the past?
Sure. I'll send an email to your team. We did a metrics paper where, you know, we defined some base level metrics.
Okay.
And you wouldn't believe how much time we spent talking about finality. I'm not sure we're done yet either, but
haven't reached consensus.
No. a rough consensus on finality. We finally got there enough to get the paper done.
That's right, rough consensus and running code. What more do you need?
I think we have some Byzantine members.
But I'll send that to you guys, and you're definitely the, I have to update the website a little bit. But you know, you're welcome to join. You're welcome to stay on the call too, if you want. I think, the next thing I wanted to cover is we had talked about maybe, the internship program. I think this is the last week to submit a proposal. So we had talked about maybe a test net. But I reached out to Hyperledger. They can't fund or staff people for a test net. I don't, go ahead.
My friend, if you don't mind, I had one question for you, and I think I was fortunate not able to talk about this earlier, but one of the things that Christian had mentioned in terms of the team we reached out to in IBM, Gary Singh and others, and Alexandra Sarnioti and Marco Bukulich in Zurich, is that we talked to them about a month ago, and then we just haven't heard back from them in several weeks. And so if you guys have any access to them, it would be nice if you could just ask on our behalf, you know, what's going on, because we don't know what's happening.
Well, I think Ali was doing that, and he was on holiday for a bit, so that could be part of it. Plus, we had our major conference earlier in February.
Okay.
That sort of consumes everybody on any team.
Oh, I see.
At IBM. And so I will poke at Ale, and because I know that we've already, like I said, we've already begun on some of the ideas.
Right.
I mean, it'd be great if we could share some code. You know, again, as I mentioned, there's obviously been a significant amount of refactoring since 1.2. So, you know, how much of it is fully, you know, transportable is another thing. But, you know, certainly we're, I think we're eager to work with you guys.
Right. I mean, there had been this talk of Christian doing an internship with Alessandro this summer, and we were kind of keen to figure out if that's actually happening or not.
Okay, I will ping the team.
Okay, thank you so much. So if you don't mind, I'm going to drop out of the call, but really appreciate your having us on.
Appreciate you making the time to come talk with us and answer our questions. Hopefully you've gotten a little bit of positive feedback from us as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
My pleasure. And if you want to shoot me an email to for everybody who is interested in the call graph, or I can just send the analysis to Mark and he will distribute it, what's the best way to do
it? You should be able to send it right to the performance and scale working group email.
Okay, then I will do that.
That the invite was to? You could just reply to that message if you want with a call graph. That would be fine.
Okay. And all right. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
So we got a couple minutes left. So we started talking about test nets. I haven't heard back. Red Hat has a relationship with some of the colleges in Boston who have a big mass open cloud, it's called, or open computing, something like that. And I was trying to get in touch with them about getting some time on some systems to be used as a test net, Fabric or Sawtooth or whatever. But I haven't been able to get in touch with them. But I also, Dave Husby had reached out to me about test nets to see if, you know, we're still interested, but he basically said there was really nothing Hyperledger could fund at this point or staff as far as test nets go. And I know Vipin had brought up test nets last week on the call. So I didn't know if people are really interested in trying to pursue test nets or if we should just drop it. Chris, I don't know, is IBM doing anything with test nets at this point?
There was some talk about it. I tend to think that with something like this, there's pros and cons, right? Having a network that's already stood up and you just start interacting with it is fine if it's something like Ethereum, where basically there's no administrative you know, side of things, generating keys and so forth, adding them. So in a permissionless thing, it's fine. In a permission environment, then somebody's got to be there adding people, creating orgs and, I mean, consortia and so forth, channels. And so what I certainly think is that it's much easier if you can just very quickly spin up your own cluster with no, I mean, you know, literally it doesn't take anything. You push a button, you get a kube cluster and you spin up a fabric thing and then start working with it is a much better approach. That's part of what we're thinking of contributing. I'm going to say thing. We've already got approval. We just have to have people that are willing to work on it. But and you know, this basically takes all of the difficulty out of doing something like that, so that you can just design your test and focus on that part rather than focus on the whole fabric piece of things. So bottom line, I don't know that we're in the position where we're willing to sort of host and manage a test net because of all the overhead involved.
Right. And I guess one of the things we discussed, it's not necessarily a quote unquote public test net where people can just come kick the tires.
It would, exactly. Right.
It would has be to for be performance permission. Or interop yeah. or something.
Right. Yeah.
So there's
now we are doing some things, you know, we are, there's ongoing work in the interoperability working group to stand up nodes on various, you know, fabric managed service providers and start, you know, exchanging invitations, so to speak, and demonstrate interoperability between fabric, quote unquote, networks. And they may be around for test purposes, but they're fit for purpose. In other words, the purpose is to test that interoperability and that integration, not so much let anybody come in and do whatever they want.
Right. Okay.
And basically, you have to bring your own peers anyway, so there has to be you have to stand right. it up somehow. Right.
Right. All right. Anybody else have thoughts? Todd, is that something Oracle's interested in? Like a
fabric? Well, I'm curious. What's the goal of a testnet in this environment?
Well, one possible goal could be a scalability test, or you know, just even performance. Can you stand up more machines, you know, with three or four companies than you can by yourself? And they'd be geographically distributed potentially.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we definitely want to get to that and test, you know, sort of the network part of this whole equation. pardon me. And we definitely want to demonstrate multi-cloud, whether it's multi-vendor, multi-cloud, or multi-cloud. That I think that's a given. That's a function of what the interop working group is trying to pull off. And then, but in terms of scale, I mean, you know, the next piece of this is obviously going to be who's going to pay for all of this, right?
Right.
Every time I run a test and I'm still at like, you know, 20 workers or something like that in my kube cluster, and you know, but it costs a lot of money.
Yes.
Somebody's paying for it. It is not me.
Well, there's potentially, you know, like CNCF. I'm surprised the Hyperledger didn't really push that relationship as much as I thought they would.
I think that went away, though.
CNCF did? Okay.
Yeah.
Too expensive?
I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to talk to Intel.
Okay.
I think what happened is that they limited it to stuff that's in the CNCF. I think originally it was going to be just sort of anything cloudy.
Right.
And I think they cut back on that, maybe because they got too many requests. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe Dan took the machines on sabbatical with him. Okay. So we'll sort of back burner test nets for now. The other question would be, does this group want to come up with a project for an intern and, you know, put a proposal in for an intern for the summer? You know, test nets was one of the things we had talked about. I don't know what else, you know, we're hoping they could run some use cases with Provenance or something. But if there's no test net, they can't really run them somewhere, right?
Yeah, I mean, do you have an idea about what kind of scale you want this test net to be?
I mean, I was thinking, you know, if each group did whatever their minimal, even the minimum, you know, like 4 or 5, I don't know what the minimum hardware requirement is for Fabric. You know, it's probably one of, you know, a couple pods, right? But if, you know, there are 100 people, that's a lot. If there's only 3 people, then we need more than a couple pods or containers, excuse me. So it was just like a discussion we were trying to open up again.
Okay. Because I might be able to find some resources, but I'd have to get an idea about what scale we're talking about here.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe for next week.
Yeah. All right. So for intern, we have to submit something by the 8th, which is Friday. I'm not seeing anything coming out of this group right away that we'd use an intern for. Because then we have to mentor the intern, and so we have to dedicate time for that too. Anyone disagree with that assessment?
I think you have consensus.
I think you have fidelity on that one.
Yeah, fidelity is fine. All right. The other thing real quick, because we're just about out of time. Harish had put it in the chat for this meeting, but he had also put it in the PSWG Rocket Chat. He did a blog where he compared the Fast Fabric paper to his paper. And I had mentioned before you guys got on the call, Keshav, about it. And they've already been in communication with Harish and had seen that. So that's why I didn't bring it up on the call, because we were doing other things. But if people want to read that, get a little background, feel free. Anything else people want to bring up before I let you go? All right. Well, Chris, thanks for joining us. Feel free to stop in anytime.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Good call. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks. Ciao.
Bye.